This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio.
What do I want my life to amount to, and what is a successful, meaningful life?
When Sam Stockhill asked himself those questions as an 18-year-old school leaver, I don't think he could have imagined where he would go to find the answers. But he'll be sharing his remarkable story of total trust a little later on today's programme. And what happens when two people take a new look at some old words? We've got the answer to that question too. But first, a restful couple of minutes in the company of the London Fox Choir.
Oh, breath of life, come sweeping through us. Revive thy church with life and power. Oh, breath of life, come cleanse me, new us, and fit thy church to me. O wind of God, come bend us, break us, till humbly we confess our need. Then in thy tenderness we
The London Fox Choir and O Breath of Life Come Sweeping Through Us. For the last 150 years, the Leprosy Mission has been at the forefront of the global fight to eliminate leprosy. In those years, they've seen tremendous progress, and while the journey is far from over, the steady development of vaccines and other treatments mean that it's realistic to look to a future when the transmission of this disease can be stopped. But people already struggling with life-changing disabilities, mental health issues, poverty and discrimination, all the results of untreated leprosy, will still need specialist care, something the Leprosy Mission excels at delivering. Sam Stockhill was appointed last autumn as the new Community Partnership Manager for the Leprosy Mission, in charge of a large part of Northern England, which extends to include the Isle of Man. Here, the Leprosy Mission is a separate Manx-registered charity, but benefits from visits from Sam with news of specific appeals and support for their local fundraising work. But the conversation I recorded with Sam on his last visit wasn't just a Leprosy Mission update. It was an inspiring story of faith and trust in God. As this was the first time I'd met Sam, I was keen to find out how he'd become involved in the work of the Leprosy Mission.
I've been working for the Leprosy Mission since September last year, and my connection with the work of the Leprosy Mission goes back to Nepal, where I was a missionary for 8 years and just returned September last year.
Now, you're a family man, so were you there with your wife and children?
Yes, so we moved out back in 2014 to New Zealand with the plan to go to Papua New Guinea. The earthquake happened in Nepal in 2015. we started praying for Nepal, and God really broke our hearts for Nepal. So instead of going to Papua New Guinea, we took a change of plan. And so it was a big detour to get us to Nepal eventually in 2016.
So where did all this strong faith come from, Sam? Are you from a servant-hearted family?
Yeah, from a really good Christian family. I didn't live as a Christian as a teenager. It was when I was 18 and I was going to university. At that point, I started thinking, what do I want from my life? And what legacy do I want to leave? What do I want my life to amount to? And what is a successful, meaningful life? And it's then when I started thinking about, well, maybe instead of going into the fields that I was thinking about, maybe I'll take some time out, go to Bible college and pursue the faith of my parents a bit more seriously and see if what Jesus said about giving up your life and losing your life to find it is really real. So I went for it. I went wholehearted for it.
Now, you're married to Hannah. Yeah. Did she share your passion for your servant-heartedness?
Oh, absolutely. So I met Hannah at Bible college in Hungary. So she's from America and she's amazing. I mean, when I went to Bible college, there were lots of Americans and my friends all said, you'll end up marrying an American. I said, I won't marry an American. But I couldn't stop myself because Hannah she's amazing. She's the kindest person. I mean, talking about sharing that passion, the first time I ever met her was in a prayer meeting and we were praying for some countries and she was praying and just weeping and praying and weeping and praying. I'd never heard someone pray with so much compassion and passion. And I thought to myself, I want to marry this woman. We moved to England and she was almost disappointed. She wanted to be a missionary from being really young. And she was saying, you know, my vision of my life was I'm going to be in a mud hut somewhere, going and looking after the poorest of the poor and reaching people with the gospel. And we ended up in Bradford and we had some amazing years of ministry in Bradford. But we moved to New Zealand, as I mentioned, with the plan to go to Papua New Guinea. When we started praying about Nepal, I went to visit. Hannah didn't go to visit. The flights were expensive, so I went on my own. I came back, I said, it's going to be really different, but it's incredible. I think we need to go. And without question, she just said, let's go, let's go.
So did you go as part of an organisation?
We worked with a lot of different organisations, but we went fundamentally as independent missionaries. And that was quite scary. It seemed like a great idea, but I remember the week before we went to Nepal, dropping my kids off at school, at primary school, and having this moment of thinking, what am I doing? I'm taking my kids to a country I know very little about. We're not with an organization. We're just going to turn up and see what God wants us to do in this place. And I was driving home and I was crying on the way home thinking, am I really going to do this? So I think we've done a lot of courageous stuff, but it's not been easy. We've been afraid about things, but it's just been that conviction of this is what God has for us and that sense that something's more important than your fear and not listening to your fear. And yeah, we've always had a strong conviction that you don't regret the things you step out and do and try, you know, all the adventures you take. I think you have regrets when you don't do things that you wish you maybe had. And we said, we're going to live in a way where we don't have regrets. We're just going to live by faith and try things and see where it ends up. And
but going as independent missionaries to a country where you didn't know very much, what did you do when you got there?
I had one contact and that was with a Bible college and I ended up running the Bible college. So that was my main role. So my background is I studied theology. So I ran a Bible college. In the end, I was overseeing pastoral training and leadership all around Nepal. But when we first turned up, I mean, we just turned up in a guest house. We had one Nepali friend who met us, a friend of a friend. And we said to him, you know, where's the local shop? What do we eat tonight? Are we safe to go out? We just knew so little about what life was like. And obviously that changed over time. And we connected with a lot of different organizations as the years went by. But we turned up with very little knowledge of what the country was like and where we were going. But just, yeah, a conviction that God was going to lead us and use us.
Did you find that the people were intrigued by you or supportive of you? Or
they were so welcoming. It was fun, but it was also... yeah, difficult at times to walk out and be like celebrities with this big family of young kids and have everyone stopping and wanting to take photos and wanting to talk to us. I mean, it was great for me because I was so eager to learn the language. So I had everybody wanting to come and talk and I could practice my Nepali, although they wanted to speak English often. But people were really welcoming. And I think because we put it as a priority to learn the language, to love the food and to immerse ourselves in their culture, and I think people really respected that we came to love their culture and to get to know them. Hannah is the kindest person you'll meet, and she couldn't go to the shop without bringing somebody home. So she'll go to buy some vegetables, and 2 hours later, she'll turn up at the house with three other ladies who she'd been chatting to, and she'd invite them back for tea. She was just incredible, and she's the one who opened most of the doors for ministry, because she would just meet people, talk to people, and would be doing kind of Bible studies in a house with new believers, and it would all be through Hannah's networking. She was just brilliant at that. After a few years, she became a teacher in an international school in Kathmandu, which was an amazing opportunity for her. There was a bit of sadness that she didn't have the same freedom to go out and to do those kind of pioneering networking things that she did in the beginning.
So when you were there, how much incidence of leprosy did you see?
Well, that became a big part of what I was doing. So very early on, I had a friend, a Nepali friend, who had been going to a local leprosy colony. And he said, "Sam, do you want to come with me?" I think when I went to Nepal, I was aware that leprosy was still an issue in the world. I had no idea how prevalent and devastating it still is. I mean, someone's diagnosed with leprosy every 2 minutes. I had no idea that it was still such an issue. I agreed to go with my friend. There was definitely a bit of fear. I was almost ashamed to ask, you know, is it safe? Can I shake people's hands if they want to? Am I okay to touch people? I didn't ask. I was ashamed to ask. So I went along with a bit of fear, and it was just broken on the first time I went. So these are people who were diagnosed with leprosy a long time ago and did not get the treatment that they needed. And they'd been living on the colony for a long time. So they were severely disfigured and disabled by the disease. And it was just heartbreaking to see the conditions that they were living in and the physical deformities and the pain that people were in and the ongoing sickness and the low immunity. That was heartbreaking. So initially, I was doing a lot of different projects to improve the conditions, whether fixing roofs or putting solar lighting in or giving wheelchair access to people, doing a lot of work like that. And as time went on, again, I felt God's prompting to say what these people really need is relationship. They need you to go around their homes regularly, to be consistent with them, to just spend time to listen to their stories. And thankfully, after a few years, I was proficient enough in Nepali to have a conversation with people. I still sounded like a Yorkshireman speaking Nepali, but my understanding was very good. So I could have a conversation, and that became my main focus, to go around homes and weekly to listen to the stories of the same people, the same stories, week in, week out. And that took the heartbreak to another level, because you realize that the pain of leprosy is not just a physical, it's a rejection. So these people were not from Kathmandu. They were living in Kathmandu because at a young age, they were diagnosed with leprosy. They were pushed out of their families, of the communities. They were sent to the wonderful leprosy hospital in Kathmandu, Anandaban, which is an incredible place. They were treated, and they should have been welcomed back into their own communities, because after treatment, you're not contagious. But they were not allowed to go back to their families, not allowed to go to the community. So they had to live in this colony in Kathmandu. And that's what's awful. A lot of them were late 50s, 60s, and saying, "I've not seen my family since I was a teenager or a child." And that was heartbreaking. So it was a privilege to just sit there and to hear their pain and to be present with them and to love them and to spend time with them week in, week out. And that's what I did for 8 years.
The stigma still attaches to the disease. It stops people admitting that they are unwell. And that's when it needs to be caught.
Somebody's diagnosed with leprosy every 2 minutes. When it is treatable, but people don't own up to the symptoms they have, they don't come forward. So generally, the stories that we hear time and time again is a child or a young adult notices a patch on their skin. They're concerned about it. They have a gut feeling this could be leprosy, but they don't say anything. Because the moment that they say to people at their school or their family, "I think this might be leprosy," people are going to shun them. So they keep quiet until the nerve damage becomes too bad that the hands don't function anymore. And a child will be in school and they can't hold a pencil anymore. Or a lady's working in the field and she can't hold her tools anymore. She can't hide it. People know. But by that point, other people have got it. So the rest of your family might have it. And also your disabilities now are going to be permanent. So that's what's heartbreaking, that if people could come forward early and be treated early, disabilities would be minimized and transmission would be minimized. But it's the stigma that stops people. It's the stigma. And then also it's the lack of knowledge in healthcare professionals or the lack of access to healthcare that stops people getting the treatment they need.
So what brought about the decision to come back, Sam?
It was a hard decision to come back because Nepal, in many respects, is home for us. So my children, I would say they're half Nepali, if not more. That's the food they want to eat. So they've tried fish and chips. They don't like it. They want rice and lentils. They want Nepali food. And we love the country so much. We love the people so much. And we loved what we were doing. And it's a privilege, actually, that we came back, not because of burnout or relational issues. We came back because we felt it was the right time for our children, who were getting a little bit older, to have some time to adjust to the culture of the UK before they go to university. So our oldest is 15 and doing GCSEs. And we felt it was the right time to come back. Having said that, it's still on our hearts, and I could see us going back in the future at some point. My oldest girl, Millie, is working in my dad's coffee shop. She's saving up money to go back and visit next year. And she's already saying once she finishes university, she'd love to go back. So I could see us all going back at some point.
I would have imagined that coming back, seeing a job with the Leprosy Mission, did you feel that that was very much God's prompting for you?
Absolutely. And it's the continuity with what I was doing before. Because I was saying to someone recently, we had a lot of goodbyes to say when we left Nepal. And it was hard to say goodbye to people. But the most moving goodbye was we did a celebration at the Leprosy Colony. For my time there, they put a small party on for me. And that was perhaps the most emotional goodbye, because I loved that community so much. And I got to speak to a few of them recently through a friend who's still working there, and he told them that I'm working for the Leprosy Mission, and they were so moved to hear that. And to keep that continuity, to be advocating for them, to be speaking out for them still, is a real privilege.
And there is nobody that can speak out better than somebody who has been there, where these people are your friends. The country is somewhere you love and that you know, and that's the most passionate and effective speaking, isn't it?
No, absolutely. I'm speaking from experience, but it's a cause that I feel so aligned with that it's easy to be speaking out on their behalf.
Generally, there's a campaign that's something that is your particular focus. Are you leaving us with a particular campaign this time?
Yes, the current campaign is in Odisha, India. The condition of the colonies in Odisha, India are terrible. So this is a new area that we've not worked in before. Just to keep it short, there was a missionary who was working in this area who was killed. He was martyred with his two children over 2 decades ago. And so from that point on, international organisations, INGOs moved out of this state and said it's too dangerous to work in this area. And people on these colonies have just been neglected for over 2 decades. The conditions are horrendous. And we've just started our new project in this area. And it's incredible. So we're building homes. We're providing clean water, we're treating the issues around leprosy, the disabilities. It's a holistic project in that we're wanting to completely transform the conditions for people living on these colonies. So please look at our website and read more about it, because it's an incredible new project.
I am the God that healeth thee. I am the Lord your I sent my word and healed your disease. I am the Lord, your healer. I am the God that healeth thee. I am the Lord, your healer. I sent my word and healed your disease. I am the Lord, your healer.
I am the God that healeth thee, from musician and worship leader Don Moen. And before that, I was talking with Sam Stockhill, Community Partnership Manager for the Leprosy Mission. The Leprosy Mission Isle of Man is a Manx-registered charity, and you can find them on Facebook or read about the work of the Leprosy Mission worldwide and the India project that Sam was talking about by visiting theleprosymission.org.uk. In less than 70 words, Jesus gives us a prayer to learn by heart and a prayer to get inside our hearts, shaping the way we live. Those are the words of the Archbishop of York, Archbishop Stephen, talking about the Lord's Prayer. But familiar as the words are, Archbishop Stephen calls us to think about them because he believes that these are words to lead us to a better, fuller life and also to be a pathway for people to explore the Christian faith. This morning, the Dean of the Cathedral in Peel, the Very Reverend Nigel Godfrey, and Rosemary Clark, a member of the Cathedral staff team, each explain what just a few words from the prayer are saying to them.
Give us today our daily bread. The request is a simple ask for our daily bread. Yes, we are asking for ourselves, but also for our world. Bread represents a staple food, or more generally, in the prayer, the essentials necessary for daily life. The people of Israel, as they wandered through the desert after the exodus from the slavery of Egypt, were given manna, bread from heaven. Something they were gifted by God, sufficient for one day alone, the Sabbath excepted. Yet we live in an acquisitive culture where we always want more and more of everything, both today and tomorrow, and many of us have lost sight of what is essential for a fulfilled life today. The first temptation facing Jesus as he prepared for his public ministry was, while fasting in the wilderness, being hungry and being tempted to create bread from stones around him. Jesus' response to the temptation is, "One does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." There is no denying essential human need here, but ensuring that meeting our human need is viewed in the context of what God wants for us all. A mirroring of God's priorities. Your will be done on earth as in heaven. So as we pray for the essentials in life, asking for our daily bread, we're also asking the same for our world, where prayer and action go together. So give us today our daily bread, that none may go hungry.
Hallowed be your name, hallowed, made and kept holy, revered, honoured. The Bible talks about the holiness of God, but many Christians, including me, are often fairly casual in our relationship with him. Most times I hear the names of God or Jesus, they are being used either completely without thinking or as a deliberate form of swearing. I've learned to deafen my ears to bad language, but maybe there's a place for challenging it. Or maybe we need to take more seriously the challenge of being salt and light in our world, living positive Christian lives, cultivating friendships with those outside our normal circle, showing Christ's love in a practical, caring way, and making sure that we ourselves hallow God's name.
Sharing their thoughts on the Lord's Prayer today were the Very Reverend Nigel Godfrey and Rosemary Clark from the Cathedral in Peel. And the Archbishop of York, Archbishop Stephen, will be on the island on Sunday, the 6th of July, and looks forward to meeting as many as possible when he's in the Cathedral that evening at 6 p.m. He'll be sharing some thoughts, but also listening and answering questions, and everyone is welcome. The session in the Cathedral in Peel starts on Sunday the 6th at 6 p.m. and will end around 7:30. And now it's notice board time, beginning with services today, the 22nd. Thank you, Angela Southern, who writes to tell us that Balaguerry Chapel in St Mark's are celebrating their Sunday school anniversary with a service this afternoon at 2:30. It'll be led by Reverend Dr Janet Corlett, with Gareth Moore playing the organ and singing by the children who go to Messy Church. The service will be followed by afternoon tea, and there's a warm welcome for everyone, especially those who are old scholars of Balaguerry Chapel Sunday School. Also today, Sandygate Chapel invites you to celebrate their 163rd chapel anniversary this evening at 6:30. Mr. Bert Quayle will preach, Bill Corlett is the soloist, and John Neal the organist, and there'll be refreshments afterwards. Also this evening, the Mariners' Choir will be in Moran Parish Church for a service starting at 6:30, and as usual, this will be followed by supper and community hymn singing. Into the week ahead now, and St Thomas's Church, just off the promenade by the Gaiety Theatre here in Douglas, offer you an hour of popular music this Wednesday evening in the company of the choir Manx Voices, conducted by Angela Stewart. It starts at 7:45 with free admission, refreshments afterwards, and a retiring collection if you'd like to donate. This Thursday, the 26th, being the last Thursday in the month, means it's time for Tea at Three, a time to meet friends old and new at Balaguerry Methodist Chapel in St Mark's Village. Fellowship and a delicious afternoon tea, served at 3:00. Everyone is welcome. Also on Thursday, this week's summer concert in St Catherine's Church in Port Erin will be given by Castle Rushen High School Music Groups at 7:30, with free admission and a retiring collection if you'd like to help with expenses. Bride Methodist Ladies invite you to another of their delicious lunches. It's this Friday, the 27th of June, in Bride Methodist Hall, where a two-course lunch with tea or coffee will be served between noon and 2 p.m. Lunch is £12 per person, and to book, phone or text Claire on 451 692. 451 692. The Choir of St Peter's College, Oxford, is giving a short concert on Friday, the 27th of June, at 5:30 p.m. in the Chapel of St Thomas at King William's College. It's entitled Sing Joyfully, An Evening of Sacred Music. Admission is free and all are welcome. And on Friday evening, the Methodist and United Reformed Churches in Ramsey are joining forces for their Midsummer Buffet and Quiz. That's this Friday, the 27th, and they're raising funds to support the work of Scripture Union Ministries Trust amongst young people in the north of the island. The buffet and quiz will be in St Paul's Hall in Ramsey and starts at 6:30. It's just £10 per person for quiz entry and a buffet supper. You can pay on the door, but you do need to reserve your place beforehand for catering purposes. And you can do this by phoning and leaving a message on 898 377, 898 377. Quiz teams can be between 5 and 8 members. Come as a team or come and join in with others to make up a team on the night. And finally, this year's annual Big Hymn Sing will be next Sunday, the 29th, at Trinity Methodist Church at Rosemount here in Douglas. All choirs are invited to take part. There'll be a rehearsal at 2 p.m. next Sunday afternoon, led by Dr. Peter Littman, Director of Music at the Cathedral. Then there'll be a break, followed by a short service led by Reverend Dr. Michael Bryden, and the service will start at 4:30. The festival organist is Gareth Moore, and choirs coming along who would like to robe are most welcome to do so. And that's all for now. But I'll be back tonight at 9:00, opening the virtual lounge door and inviting you to join me for easy listening music and your requests and dedications. And I'd love you to join me if you can. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening and wishing you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning. Station, Manx Radio.